Welcome to the podcast. I was having 29. But let's first head over to the Nerdist Community Corkboard, where the plucky Katie and the delightful Kyle are ready to go.
You want to go first?
Sure. This is from, I am going to butcher this person's name, Tishka Valadina. She is an avid animal and art lover, and she also studies medicine full-time, and she recently started an Etsy store selling her handmade watercolor and soft lead pencil artworks that feature endangered animals, with 100% of the proceeds going towards conservation efforts. Prices are there. She says they're pretty affordable, from $5 to $20. That's Australian dollars. I don't know what
I like that when I read
is.
This, I was like, I bet Katie picks this because there's an animal
he
in it.
He sent it to me.
I did send it to her.
Okay.
I did.
I don't know what the Australian, you know, prices are these days, but that sounds affordable, right? $5 Australian, sure. She also takes commissions.
That's like a million America dollars.
It's the bill with the wallaby on it.
She also does commissions, so we could get a picture of Scout.
What?
Oh, we should do that.
Can we get a picture Scout as yes. George Washington crossing Potomac with other Scouts rowing the boat?
You'll yes. have to get her as she's Australian, right?
Yeah.
So you'll have to get Scout crossing like Alice Springs to get from one side of Australia to the
there
other.
Scout, do you want to be drawn?
Wait. Scout Road Warrior.
Yeah. I can't picture Mad Max.
Mad Scout.
All right, what's yours, Kyle?
I want to say.
You're not done.
Her Etsy shop is called Skrazare Wild Art. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but it's Skrazare. And again, that word, Skrazare. Am I saying that right? Skrazare?
I don't live there.
And Wild Art. And if you just search Etsy, you'll find it.
All right, great. Okay. What do you got, Kyle?
I got a website called geekrising.com. Their focus is a mixture of actually like mic and gear reviews along with other nerdy stuff. I'm a big fan of the techie side of the nerd world, and especially
yes.
audio stuff. And these guys have a really cool site. And then they also do an action movie book club as a show. That's where they treat action movies like a book club, and I like the idea that they're real soft-spoken about it, and somebody's doing needlepoint, but the needlepoint is like a fist. I think that would be a good time.
Fantastic.
But it's geekrising.com, and those guys seem real cool, and I like what they're doing over there with their vlogs.
Good job. And then also just letting everyone know that At Midnight's on at 11 o'clock for the next 3 weeks before Trevor Noah takes over The Daily Show, so we're filling in we're grouting the gap.
So At Midnight is at 11.
Don't think about it too much. Yeah. There's actually a lot of debate about whether we should say 10:59 and 59 seconds or just it's 11 o'clock. And, you know, I mean, look. Technically, At Midnight starts at 12:01, but I changed it to 11:59:59 seconds because you can't. Then I couldn't say it's 12:01. This happened today. You know what I mean?
Oh, that's
it sounds weird to say it's 12:01. This happened yesterday. That feels like old news to me. So we just.
I always
say,
feel like you just establish your day ends when you go to bed.
I guess that's
like,
fair.
That's always, I feel like the people are like, no, it's tomorrow now. I'm like, no, you're still awake.
So we don't really have
that
construct that
quality
anymore.
Late
so
night
so
Comedy
like, should we just say
11?
But I think we're just going to say 10:59:59 seconds just for fun because it's only for 3 weeks. Here's the Nerdist Podcast number 729 with Rob Hubel and Paul Scheer. Katie. Thing.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Friday. Oh, yeah. So much fun.
It's so great.
So much fun. I got the BB-8.
I bought that on Amazon, but it's not come yet.
No. Did you get the Target one or the Sphero one?
The Sphero one.
You got the Sphero one, yeah.
Is that better than the or what is what's the difference, I should say?
Well, the Sphero one's much more expensive.
Oh, okay.
So
I thought they were all that price.
Okay. No. The Sphero one's much more expensive. Okay. The one that they made for Target is less expensive.
Okay.
And it works via a little remote control as opposed to
the iPhone,
the app. Yeah.
Apparently, like one of them shoots out a hologram.
Wow.
That eventually. as the movie gets closer, it's going to start to unlock things that the thing can do.
Oh my God. You know, that fucking, when I just look at the BBA thing, because I think JJ just thought, like, that was just his thing.
Yeah.
That's just, How do you just I mean, that's so amazing. You just create a whole new piece of Star Wars lore that everyone...
But you know what it was? It was because I was at that celebration announcement that when they played the trailer, the We're Back or whatever, the Han Solo trailer.
Yeah.
It was in one of the original Ralph McQuarrie art things, like in the corner. And he's like, that. And they were like, well, we can't make that. There's no technology for that. And he's like, well, we should make that. And then they had to like... basically create a technology to create that rotating thing, and they brought in this like big guy to come and design that, like, to make it practical. They were, because you only wanted to do it practical, so it was like all this technology for this.
Well, what's really fun is that you, with the one that I got at the Target Force Friday thing, it's a ball that opens, it splits in half,
uh-huh.
And there's basically a gyroscope inside, and the gyroscope has a magnet on it, and so when the ball's rolling, the little head is magnetized to the body, but not so strong that it falls off.
So
I mean, not so strong that the ball can't move, but it doesn't fall off.
Oh,
so
wow.
So the ball moves, and it's basically held in place by the gyroscope.
That's really kind of cool.
Yeah, it's pretty rad. Toys.
I love it.
Rob Hubel's also here, apparently.
Are we recording? I didn't even know that.
We're talking about... Well, you see, my big issue with BB-8, just before we get away from it, is I hope it's good, because this could be, not the movie, but BB-8. I hope we love BB-8. We already love BB-8, but we know nothing about BB-8.
No, that's true.
Like, he could... Like, I said this on Twitter. He could be a racist robot. We don't know. And now we have all collected this racist robot. We're wearing it around, and people are going to...
What do you think, BB-8? Abortions are against God! Oh, why is this in a Star Wars movie?
We hate Nemoidians. Nemoidians are the worst. The worst starship drivers.
I just want to get fingered.
Wait,
just
what?
He's a little pervert. He's just like, he just wants to get fingered.
His little butthole just opens yeah. up. And
yeah. And the butthole toy. Oh, no, Ray, don't put that in your butthole.
The Force prevents me from giving licenses to same-sex couples.
Do they?
What? BB-8?
I will go to jail for it. Shut me down. Mind erase
this is
me.
This is what the Force believes.
When they're making that movie, is there any sense, do you think, of like any sort of budget or time constraint at all? Like, is it like, oh, we really got to make our days, you know, like, or
like,
oh,
I
we
said, like, they
it doesn't matter.
Got
we just...
a guy who was not in the movies to make the technology of BB-8.
Yeah,
like,
I think they probably, I mean, they have to have a schedule. I mean, they just have to have a schedule of
right.
some sort.
But they shut down for a month for Harrison Ford.
That's true.
And they rewrote and re-edited the movie during that time.
Yeah, I do think though it is kind of a, you know, take your time and
yeah,
do what
yeah.
you need to do
yeah,
in
yeah.
Star Wars.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's like everyone was able to take a break for a month and it didn't seem like that big of a deal. Like,
right, right, right.
Think of it like this. Fast 7, or Furious 7 I should say, was $190 million to get that like out the door.
Right.
Like, so Star Wars, it's like, when you have that much money, like...
Well, remember, too, when they were doing Hateful Eight, we were in Telluride,
yeah.
and there was this whole big thing about Hateful Eight where they just needed a ton of snow. Like, they're in a
yeah.
cabin, and this year in Telluride, it just didn't snow. Like, there was just no snow.
They weren't going to fake
it. So they weren't going to fake it. So they were all there, and we were there doing some comedy shows, and they were all just hanging out, literally waiting for snow.
Waiting for snow.
For like
the
a month,
on
they're just
hold.
Hanging out, like waiting for it to snow.
Just in Telluride.
Yeah.
When we were shooting Hell Baby, Quentin Tarantino was there shooting, at that point, I think it was Django. And it was, it was Django. And in the middle of it, he said, all right, guys, good news. It's supposed to be the wrap party. He's like, we're going for 3 more weeks. Like, so it's sort of like,
I think you
extending.
Just go, yeah, you just do whatever.
Yeah, there are some people, well, especially with Quentin, though, because he's an indie guy, so he can
yeah.
kind of pull his own strings at this point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I think, you know, when you're working with a major studio, I'm sure there aren't a lot of productions that could go to Disney and be like, yeah, we're shutting down for a month. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What are you going to mm-hmm. do?
But I feel like that's Disney's MO is probably like, this is how we work best. Like, Avengers notoriously starts without a script, or like, it's sort of like, we got the idea. There'll
right.
be a Hulkbuster. And we'll kind of write it. We're going to write it. And there'll be things. Like, it's every time you look like write anything with Joss Whedon, it's like, oh, yeah, I just rewrote the ending. It's like, wait, you're already like halfway through shooting. Like, they're just, I think, a lot of just like, yeah, yeah, we're going to call them on the fly, which maybe works.
I
don't know.
I think you have to, I would assume that as a filmmaker, you know, because you know, when you can write something so meticulously, but then you start shooting it or it just starts unfolding
yeah.
and then you're like, oh my God! You know, in the theoretical creativity versus practical creativity, there's so they're different, and then you have to be flexible to go, oh, you know what, I guess I we were wrong. It's like, you know.
Well, that's why I think the Star Wars will be good, because they had a month, and I did read that article where JJ was like, we got to watch what we already shot, realize where there was problems, reshoot scenes that we didn't think worked, and then rewrite the movie. Like, so they were able to really course correct. And I think Woody Allen used to do that. Like, shoot a movie, go edit it, and then come back and finish it.
They were so – because when I did the panel at Comic-Con, we had a rehearsal the night before.
Uh-huh.
And it was just this star-studded cast of people who had made most of the movies that influenced me as a kid. So it was – you know, Kathleen Kennedy was there, and Frank Marshall, and amazing. You know, and then also JJ was there, and then Brian Burke, who's the other guy from Bad Robot, and they were just the fucking coolest, nicest, funny, like would laugh at jokes, would crack jokes, like that, like just really cool people.
They said that they want to be there.
Yeah, and having that experience made me so much more on board, just knowing like, you guys are fucking cool. You made all the cool stuff, and it turns out you're not dicks.
Yeah.
There was a cool clip online I just saw of like all this behind the scenes stuff of what they can release right now, and a lot of it is just the people on set on Star Wars just going like, it's all the actors in the movie going, I fucking can't believe it. This is so cool.
Yeah, like Simon Pegg.
Yeah. They're all just like, I can't believe I'm doing this.
I mean, I think that's the energy, that it seems like the right energy to make something really good is like, you know, to be like, oh, we're excited, not like, oh, whatever, I'm over it.
Well, how do you, you know, it's like, hey, like in a way, I almost feel bad for Simon Pegg, because what could he possibly?
What do you do after
he was
that,
in a fucking Mission Impossible series, Star Trek, Star Wars.
It's Shaun the best.
Like, what fucking else can this guy? I mean, like, how can he keep? You know,
It's like they have to make new franchises for him to be in.
They have
like, he's got to get. He's got to somehow get in Ghostbusters. He's going to be Slimer in the next Ghostbusters.
But his career is so amazing,
and he's just in a stormtrooper costume, right? That's what they. I think it was released that he's just in a costume, right? I think he's just a trooper.
Is he just a trooper?
I think he just showed up for one day and is in it. But still,
does he lift up the helmet and wink to the
camera?
It's like, slowly.
How great would that be to be a stormtrooper, though? Just for, I mean, I've always wanted to do that in Star Trek. Like, put me in the Klingon costume.
That'd be funny if you're like, I just want to be a stormtrooper in Star Trek.
No, you can't outcross. Well, did you do that in Walking Dead? Someone was telling us, don't people do that every now and then? Like, they're just like zombies in the background.
They've started.
You went to training camp.
I didn't go to training camp. Okay. I did. They made me up for the first season of Talking Dead. I went through the makeup, and then Nicotero taught me how. It's actually harder than you think it's going to be.
Yeah.
Because you have this idea in your head of how a zombie walks, and you start doing it, and you just look like a fucking moron. He's like, no, you look like someone trying to look like, you know, you look like a Corman movie.
Yeah.
And so there is a real kind of an art to making it look real. But I think they've started not doing that as much anymore, because, you know, Scott Ian, there were a few people that they made walkers, but.
Right.
I think they started getting worried. I think it with Gimple, he was just worried that if you – and it's the reason why I've always – they used to offer like, oh, you could be a zombie. You could be a walker. And I'm like, yeah, but if people recognize the person, it immediately takes them out of the drama of the story.
Yeah.
And I don't – you know, I like people who hate me already accuse me of ruining Walking Dead, and I'm not on the show. So I don't want to literally ruin it by being on it and then having, you know, I'm a fan. I don't want to be the fan that ruins it for other fans.
To me, I believe that if you could recognize a walker, it would, regardless of who it is, you'd be like, bummer. Like,
yeah, it's just not as cool.
Because I think they look so unrecognizable. Like, I think they just look like people. So I feel like, the minute you see anybody.
I'm actually kind of surprised, though, because there are little molecular moments where they can throw a little bit of levity on Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah, no.
But they never did that. Just, you would think that it's not out of the realm of possibility. Like, oh, hey, that was the Channel 8 weatherman. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, there would be walkers. I mean, it affected everyone. So naturally, people on
TV would be great.
It would be the best way to see it.
Is that Diddy? You know what I mean? Like, someone would have been in the 404.
Fear the Walking Dead. There's a chance for a lot more Hollywood celebrities.
It's all celebrities. Yeah.
I mean, you could get a lot of people. Just anybody at all. That'd be great. Exclusively celebrity walkers.
Yeah, it's just like they just start going. It's just like they get near the Soho House, like on Sunset.
That's where it broke out. That's where it started. like they had some sort of culinary class where they had brought some sort of weird bacteria, and it grew out of the Soho House.
No, it was probably some weird Gwyneth Paltrow probiotic thing that started. Because Lydia was telling me that they're moving the Hustler Club. I haven't confirmed this with any research. She said they're moving the Hustler Club, and Gwyneth Paltrow is opening a members-only club in the place where the current Hustler Club is. This is true? Your publicist is saying this is true. And it's – but she said that there's – and I don't know. This is third-party information, so I don't know if this is true. But just all these weird rules about like – you're not. You won't be allowed to swear in it, and you won't all these kind of strange.
It's like
it's just like okay,
but it's going into the Hustler building.
Yes, so the Hustler store is moving to another location to Hollywood Boulevard.
But it's going
to
be haunted with the ghosts of dildos like, and butt plugs.
Like
and,
when the UCB
dried wall
when the UCB first opened over on one of the first
when they moved.
Theater.
Yeah, it was on 17th. Yeah.
It used to be like an
It was on 22nd.
Yes.
22nd.
An old strip club in New York. And so
the Harmony Theater,
and people would come in nonstop for years, like just thinking it was a strip club, walk into an improv show for about 5 minutes, like, no, this is not it. And then awkwardly have to walk out. But to me, like a lot of times people would walk in and they'd take a seat and they'd wait for a show to begin. Like, but they were sitting in UCB style seating. I'm like,
yeah, that was a weird thing because that building was very much like haunted by the, all these former customers. Like, because it was a lot of like Hasidic Jews coming into the comedy theater and they did not know that it was a comedy theater. They were just like waiting for these like strippers.
Off the floor and you it was a gross place. Yeah.
What?
That's where the theater
this is the
was.
Very first UCB theater. Yeah.
Painted the walls, like literally painted the walls and mopped out like
One time we turned over a like a table like this and on the bottom of the table it was just all this gum that the strippers like before they would go they would stick the gum under the table and you would just rainbow of like, you know, broken gum.
Yeah, it was real, real gnarly place. And it was and by the way, lest you think that this is a nice place, it was a disgust. No, like, I mean, even going to that strip club, it was like, it was just a weird spot. You would never think of it as a strip club. It was really, it was uneven attractive as a strip club. It was an ugly down and out strip club at its best.
And the funny thing is that I almost feel like in a lot of cases, comedy is almost a little more revealing than stripping, especially at UCB where I feel, you know, it seems like. The MO was to put, you know, to push boundaries and to do things that, you know, other places wouldn't.
Well, would that? I mean, to me, that's why I feel like if you sat in that audience for the first time and you're like, all right, I'm here to see a strip show, and then everyone comes out in white painters' outfits and they're pretending that they're robots, you're like, oh, cool, all right, this is weird. We used to show Robot TV where that's what it was, and like, and there's like a guy playing guitar, and you probably thought for like at least 10 minutes, like, all right, when's the tits coming? Like,
yeah,
but I know they're coming. This is a weirder version.
Did you ever place bets on who was gonna make it the longest through a show? Like, someone wants to see tits so bad,
yeah,
that they'll sit through all this weird esoteric shit, hoping
you
like,
just look out there and just see like old dicks coming out of people's pants. You'd be like, what is happening?
You would only notice it really because people would get up at the wrong time. Like, it wasn't like they weren't there long enough to not like the show. They were just there long enough to know it wasn't a strip club. And just get up and awkwardly shut.
I didn't know. I mean, I guess I'm being religiously ignorant, but I didn't know that Hasidim went to strip clubs.
That was
just this one, I think. And it was maybe there's like an unwritten code where it's like, and it was just guys, they weren't like proudly like coming in. They were kind of like sneaking in there.
Was this place, the Harmony Theater, did have a – that was their primary clientele.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Walsh lived above that theater. Remember, Matt Walsh lived above that theater, which was such a weird place.
How long did it take before it started to catch on?
Man, it took a while. I mean, for – we always talk about this because we – for years – I mean, now, like, we're very lucky because we walk into UCB and there's, like, a crowd there and we didn't do anything to promote it. But, I mean, we used to have to, like, flyer on the street. We would go out, like, in, you know – Union Square and Washington Square Park, and just hand out flyers for like hours.
But people wouldn't take our flyers, so we had to like find ways to make them take it. So
we had
like
I remember, do stunts to get people to take our flyers.
We dressed our friend Owen Burke up as Santa Claus and gave people wrapping paper tubes and said, "Hit Santa for all the gifts that he's never given you."
Yeah,
and then they would, and then we would give them a flyer to our show. Anything to get a flyer in their hand.
Another time we beat the shit out of Owen Burke. It's just all things like hitting Owen Burke.
Yeah. We'd create scenes in the street, yelling and stuff, like creating like anything to get the flyers up. Matt Besser, who's a founding member of UCB, taught us like you got to get people in the seats. And we were doing 5 shows a week when we first started there, like because it was a fully functioning theater that had not enough people to perform, and every night to fill.
And not good shows. Like, I would say, to, you know, we got...
That was like our college performing experience.
I mean, we literally learned comedy by failing. Just failing night after night.
I remember, like, one head writer of SNL. I think it was Jim Downey. Not a head writer, but one of the classic writers of SNL. Like, Jim Downey is a legend. And he saw one of our early shows. And after that show, he was like, I'm never coming back to UCB again. That place is terrible. Like, I always remember that as, like, the premier comedy guy. Like, no. Not for
but it was at the point where it was just a place that had opened and they just needed shows. So it was literally like, yeah, do you have an idea for an improv show? Put it up. Like, do you want to do a sketch show? Write it and get it up
tomorrow. We did a sketch show for one person.
Wow.
And it was this guy, Tom Blake. I remember Tom Blake sitting alone in the audience, dead center. We did a sketch show that was obviously bombing because there's only one person.
Yeah.
But then one part of the show just became that we took a baby, put it on stage, put a masking tape on its head, like a black masking tape, and just ran around and said "Bellhop Baby" and just sang "Bellhop Baby" until he left. Like, so that was the kind of shows that we were doing at a certain point.
Well, it definitely was a luxury. I mean, because now you don't have that. Like, now to take classes at UCB, there's like a line around the block. Yeah. Like, I wouldn't be able to do it now. Like, but we had the luxury of just time and like stage time, you know, and you could just figure out what works and what doesn't work. But a lot of it really was doing those sort of like fuck you shows where it's like, fuck you.
But isn't
like,
don't you get nostalgia for that sometimes?
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, now, you know, when you get older and your career starts working out, then you start weighing options like, well, I don't want to fuck this up. But at the time, you had nothing to lose. There
no
was
one to
zero
let down.
At stake.
And no one knew
Twitter.
Who you were. No one knew who you were.
There no was one can no... write about a bad show.
Yeah,
there's no comments.
Right.
There was nothing.
You were allowed to suck for a while. That's so valuable. And it just doesn't exist much anymore.
And, you know, the UCB definitely cultivated this attitude of like, fuck you. Like, we are better. Like, you know, like, and they would do insane shows. I mean, they were known for doing shows in Chicago where they took their audience out of the theater and like had a suicide in the middle of the street, and like, you know, they were getting arrested in front of Wrigley Field. So they empowered us a lot of times to be like, do that. Go crazy. Like, figure out ways to engage the audience more than a normal show. Like, they didn't want just a sketch show. They wanted something to be bigger and crazier, and so they always were facilitating these crazy ideas.
But you're right that like that doesn't exist anymore, you know,
no,
because everyone's filming it, everyone's tweeting it, everyone's Instagram,
and they will
it,
judge like, you based on one joke. Well, this whole thing sucks.
Yeah,
but you didn't even.
You know? Well, you had that ability. Yeah, you just had the ability to try. And
the good old days.
Yeah, the good old days.
But it's like, yeah, I think there is. I don't know. I feel like that energy is gone from. I mean,
but the flip side of that is that someone can become huge now off a YouTube video. You know, like some kid in Nebraska can make.
You know,
like,
he can, but I think the thing that poor kid lacks is foundation and training. Mm-hmm. And so if he does, I mean, yeah, he can make the YouTube videos, and that's an amazing place for, you know, not even YouTube, but just all social media now. I mean, like, fucking Vine stars and Snapchat celebrities.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, they're basically just delivery systems for specific audiences. But there's something about having that foundation of years of falling on your face and really cultivating, figuring out how to thrive in any environment. And I think sometimes, you know, if you're married to one platform, when you try to make a jump to another platform, there's a learning curve, but you haven't done it yet. And you're not really allowed to fuck it up because everyone already knows who you are. So,
well, it's the same way that you judge like a pilot. Like, you can't judge a series on its pilot. Like, you know, it's like, well, I didn't like that first episode. Like, very rarely is the pilot episode of anything your favorite episode. Dramas, I think, sometimes have a little bit more leeway because I think it's like more like a cinematic. But comedy, it's like, you like, part of it is like learning about the characters and finding all the nuances, but it's like we're so quick to kind of make that judgment. Like, I don't like the pilot, this show's gonna suck.
Speaking of that, like, this is my favorite time of year, like the first little chunk of September when all the new network shows come on, because like you just see the billboards around town, and I just love counting down the it's like, oh, this is gonna be out of there in 2 weeks.
But isn't even fair. Like, I feel like there was a Heather Graham show that was on TV that was canceled by like the second commercial break. It was like, you haven't even given people a chance to watch this thing yet. Like, no, we're done. Like the audience has dropped out. I mean, yes, I think a lot of them are bad, but it's funny because it's also so much work goes into, like, for something to air on your TV this fall, it has had to go through so many iterations and like so many decisions and so many people weighed in and the poster was designed and everything, and it all has failed. Yeah. Like basically everything that has led up to this thing has failed.
A tremendous amount of it literally, it would take you less time to to erect a building.
Yeah.
And then if you spent that time erecting the building and then stood back and went, oh, yeah, it doesn't work, tear it down. You know, like, it doesn't – there's no opportunity for it to grow.
But it's also like erecting a building with, like, a bunch of different people. It's like, hey, you're a construction worker. You come in here. Okay, you're a school teacher. You come in here. You're this – like, everyone who doesn't know anything
about –
you
are someone's assistant. What do you think?
And everyone, like, looks at it and goes, yeah, I would build a building like this. Like, but yeah, what about the architects? Like, let the architects build the building. It's like so many people weigh in on what they think is going to work, and – it seems like it never does. How many shows?
I started laughing, and I'm sure this is probably a great show, but just the poster made me laugh. It's some one of these like medical dramas. I think it's called like
Code Blue.
With Marcia Gay Harden.
Yeah. So, but it's all these like it's the most fascinating poster to me because it's all these like very like young, attractive nurses and doctors, and they're all like pushing, you know, the. Like a burned person down the hallway. They're
a sexy
all,
burned person.
Yeah, very sexy. Very like, sexy. Who's in Code Blue?
She's
in
a Victoria's Secret model.
They're blueing to the max. You know, like so they're pushing them down the hall. So, but it's all these like young, like in shape people. And then for some reason, Louis Guzman.
I see it every time.
Like Louis Guzman's like kind of like stealing focus a little bit. He's like, hey, where's everybody going? You
know, like, I know. Yeah, he's just like right in the corner of the. Yeah. Just to let you know that he's in there.
Yeah.
Don't forget about me.
There it is.
Yeah, because I was. And he's making the face too.
Yeah, he's screaming. He's like, get out of the way.
When I did see that poster, I was like, who pitch it? Like, I would never occur to me to go pitch another emergency room drama because I'd be like,
people love it.
They've already done this a million times.
Lawyers, like, doctors, everyone loves those shows. To me, the one show that I love the poster for, and again, I have not seen it, and I guess it's very good. Is a show called Scorpion. Like, Scorpion is like a hacker. Like, it's like...
That's the Robert Patrick show.
Yeah. Robert. And like, apparently it's good, but it's like the post... Like, I love a good post portrait. Like, I think in Scorpion, like, someone's changing a light bulb. Someone's, like, at a desk. Like, someone's hacking. It's like, it's too posed. It's
you
like,
know the things we do.
Yeah.
You're just hanging out.
Yeah.
It's hacking.
Like, it's the best, like... A good poster trying to explain what a show is.
There's one with Wesley Snipes. NBC
that one's
shows.
That was a crazy premise.
NBC shows. I went on their website yesterday, and again, great company. Love to work for you.
NBC Universal.
Totally available. Minions can't get enough. But this show with Wesley Snipes called like The Player.
Yeah. Do you know the premise?
No. What is the?
Okay. This is amazing because I'm blown away by this show as well. Wesley Snipes
is this a how did it get? Are we about to do a mini how did this get made?
It should be. He's a Vegas gambler, and so he creates odds on. So all right, I'm Wesley Snipes, and one of you guys are the runners. So I'll be like 100-1. You can't save a man from a burning building. And then people will bet on whether or not that guy can save a man from a burning building. That's the point.
Wait, I love that idea. That actually sounds great.
It's crazy. So basically, Wesley Snipes creates scenarios
for real life
betting.
Oh my god!
So it's like he's like, you can't save a person from a hostage situation.
But is he like a madman? Like, is he?
I think he's facilitating
high stakes gamblers, super rich people.
Yes.
I saw the weirdest Wesley Snipes movie. The other night on Chiller, and I'm trying to remember the name of it. Katie, could you pull up? It was a weird post-apocalyptic Western that had a supernatural element to it.
Was this after Prison Release?
I feel like it was.
There's a show called Prison Release. A movie.
The Gallo Walkers.
I already like that a lot.
It was the strangest. Lydia had fallen asleep, and I was just staring at the diet. Let's see. Here it is. The Gallo Walkers, 3.6 out of 10 from IMDb.
Not bad.
A cursed gunman, Snipes, whose victims come back from the dead, recruits a young warrior to help in the fight against a gang of zombies.
Ooh,
so
love it.
It sort of feels like Road Warrior. It's this kind of like this Western wasteland, but it's... I don't know if it's the future, but not the future. It's a really strange.
It feels a little too complicated. It's like one plot element.
Well,
too much.
No, I'll tell you what. I'm just gonna, and maybe we'll cut this out. But just so you guys can see what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it does look like a little bit like Book of Eli from the little pictures that I saw there.
Let's see if this works.
put that shit in 720, man. Now here it goes. Here we go.
Out there, the damned were stirring.
There's a vampire. Oh yeah, it's a zombie.
We die, we come back, and you call us Yellow Walkers.
You gonna give me some answers about those things?
This will keep the undead at bay.
The horsemen of the apocalypse.
You remember me.
It's kind of like Blade in the Old West.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Yeah.
Kills you for the first time.
They know who I am.
So now they will come.
There's really nothing coming that we won't see.
Well, you didn't see that.
Get ready.
Got the one thing that a gunman needs to be great. No reason to live.
Hey, come on, I don't know how to be dead.
No one taught you how to live.
Oh,
I love the trailer.
I like the trailer, looks good, I'm in. But I feel like it is like trying to capture, like, it is like Blade.
Blade. The,
yeah. You know, you said something that made me think of something that I've always been fascinated by. I drove up to San Francisco one time and stopped at the Winchester Mystery House.
Yes.
And that woman, she was married to the guy who created the Winchester gun.
Yes.
And she believed that every person that the gun had killed was coming to haunt her, and built the house in a crazy way, like stairs into a wall, doors
to confuse the ghosts.
Exactly. That's the reason for the mystery house?
And it always, yeah, and there always had to be construction going on. So there was always something. There were parts of the house that they just never went in because it was just construction for construction.
But so that's just mental illness. It's just like a
little bit. But I still love that idea that, like, she was. I love that idea of the. It's such a great idea. The ghosts of the gun that you created. It's
are coming
like a,
back. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great myth. I mean, look, that's if you're going to have mental illness, that's a good one to create.
But also that this there's just a bunch of confused ghosts. Like, well, I'm gonna. Oh, it's a wall. I'm gonna. Oh, there's not even a door here. Come on.
Why would it stop the ghost from going through the wall? Like, they
doesn't know.
It's like, ah.
And, you know, it was the Old West. They weren't smart ghosts. They weren't
they have
that
to,
smart.
Like, obey the laws of physics that we've created.
I'm gonna go down.
Not the fact that they can levitate and
also. How are the ghosts? It's not like there's Google Maps. Like, how are the ghosts going to track down this house in Northern California? I was killed in Colorado, but I feel like I'm going to go west.
I think it was a Winchester. I'm not sure it was a Winchester.
I didn't really get a good look at it.
Was it Smith & Wesson? Like, oh, you're a Smith & Wesson ghost. Get out of here.
Oh, okay. I'm going to go. Oh.
Does she live in the house?
She did, yeah.
Wow.
And she would move her bedroom around a lot.
Yeah, so it was constantly – and there was basically a compound because there were – like the construction workers and the contractors lived – they lived on the property because there was never not construction going on.
It sounds like she just had a very convincing contract. You know what you got to do? You got to just build another hallway.
Listen, we're going to finish up next week, so if you want ghosts, that's fine.
If you're cool with ghosts, that's cool with me.
I don't know. They're probably a little upset. That's
the Winchester gun is getting very popular. It's killing a lot of people.
Did she ever see a ghost, or was it like
– No, because the house was constructed. Okay.
Foolproof.
It was a ghost maze.
It was very successful.
Basically, she's treating ghosts like we play Minesweeper. Like, all right, I think it's in this area. Oh, yeah. All right, no.
Such a weird premise. It's such a weird premise. I know what I'll do. It almost sounds like a Lucy scheme to – so the ghosts –
Yeah.
Well, we'll just keep building.
Why don't you put a door against this wall? Really? Yes, they will totally freak out the ghosts.
They won't know what's going on.
Eventually, she wouldn't be able to go anywhere outside of her bedroom because there'd just be so many ghosts.
Dude, then it turns out she's the ghost.
What? Whoa. She's kept herself locked up all
along. It's like the others, but in the Old West. You know, we probably could have pitched that.
Oh, believe me.
I'm actually surprised there's not a movie based around the Winchester Mystery House. Like,
it should be. I mean, look, put Wesley Snipes in it. I'll go see it.
Is that the same thing as the Mystery Spot?
No.
No.
Okay.
Mystery spots are different. There's the mystery
that's like a vortex.
That's like some weird magnetic vortex of okay. of something else, but it's not.
Sound
it's not
goes the on there house. Too, or
the,
something.
The Winchester yeah. Mystery House is just a. It's just a maze to fuck with ghosts.
Man.
Yeah
ghosts hate show. It. They really hate it.
Drive them nuts.
They're like,
they don't like it at all.
Like, oh, I don't want to go to that Winchester Mystery House.
Do ghosts know other ghosts? Like, do you, hey, there's Steve. Where are you going down the wrong hallway, Steve? Everybody's going this way.
It depends. I guess, like, do they have, like, a
now,
ghostly
you're new,
apartment?
But I've been around since the Renaissance, and so I'm going to.
Yeah. Ghosts are always from the same time period, too. It's always, like, you know, cowboy times. You know, it's never like the ghost from, like, last week that got hit by a bus.
You're never haunted by a week-old ghost.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. No, that was a bit in my old special. There's no new ghosts. My theory was that there was some, like, you know, there was some type of Beetlejuice-style bureaucracy that, you know, it's like before you become a ghost,
you have to get your angel's wings, but you have to get your ghost haunts or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, and now, like when we're old, there'll be just, like, people running around with, like, Oculus Rift headsets.
Yes.
It's one of those early 2000 ghosts.
Stupid. Yeah, it's, I think a Winchester movie would be fucking amazing, because it is, the house is fascinating.
Man.
And she was a little woman who built low-rise stairs everywhere, so rather than having, like, a normal stairway, there were these long, like,
almost like handicap ramps, smaller steps.
Like doggy stairs? Like those little doggy stairs?
Kind of,
so that your dog can run up on the bed?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I don't like that doggy idea. I went to, I was looking at a house one time to rent, and it was and that's how they showed off the bedroom with a doggy stairwell up
this
to the
is
bed.
Where my dog fucks me.
I don't like it. If your dog can't get up on the bed, the dog doesn't belong on the bed. How about that? Like, let's give the dog some dignity in his life. All right, we don't have to cater to him to get up in the bed. How badly do you want that dog in your bed? It's also the same house that had lips for a urinal. It always grossed me
out. What? What are you talking about?
Big red
was
lips.
Like Airbnb.
It was someplace up in the Hollywood Hills. My wife and I were walking. We were like, let's go to this open house, and we walked inside. It was lips to her urinal, and that's what you peed in. And I remember
to pee in this mouth. Open up your mouth. Let me pee.
My dog. Look at this dog service. My dog can fuck me while I pee into this mouth.
By the way, again, a urinal in a house is not a thing I want either. I don't want a urinal. And
much less with lips.
Ugh. And then I looked at his, like, family pictures. And,
when were you going to rent this house?
We were just looking around. Like, we were just walking around. Like, let's do this open house. Like, pictures. Yeah. And I was looking at his family pictures. And then I noticed behind all the family pictures, it was this porn. Just rows and rows of DVD porn. And I was like, oh, like, take that out. Like, you're showing your house. Like, how do you do that? Like,
or just the right person's going to go, this is the place for
yeah,
me.
Bro. Me too. I like porn too. Too, bro.
Everything I felt like
only
had a
on
residue.
DVDs. I don't watch the internet bullshit.
Can't jerk off into those toilet lips?
Everything had a residue of, like, cocaine or, like, crushed up ecstasy or something like that.
Oh, there must be a lot of houses like that around Hollywood, just like kind of from a different era, you know, just like 80s.
It's Laurel Canyon. It's all Laurel Canyon.
Oh, really?
Do you remember? We went to a house one time when we were doing MTV, like the head of MTV. Brought us over to his house. Love the guy, an amazing guy. But he was like, yeah, my house was the house in Body Heat where they sodomized that guy with the police stick. And it was like, it was like a glass house, but that was his
claim
to fame as like his bedroom was the bedroom, like where, like, during this famous sodomy scene from.
So he just
Body
watches
Heat.
Body Heat in have that bedroom.
Ever, have you ever been to that house? Remember we went to that house? It's like Charlie Chaplin's mansion up there where all those bands have recorded. I think the Beatles recorded in this.
There's
mansion.
Like a bus out front,
and it's totally haunted. Like all these bands,
Chili
like,
Peppers recorded there,
and like but all like Korn and like all these bands.
Oh, is that the one that's on Laurel Canyon? There's like a weird. There's probably like a tunnel that goes from the street to the. I know
we were there. It was James from LCD Sound.
Right. Yeah, he was doing it down. Yeah.
So he had like a barbecue. So we went up there, and he was like, "Oh, this place is totally haunted." Like, and everyone says like it's totally haunted.
Oh wow!
But
is it just that a lot of people that record there are on super high?
Well, that's a good question. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. What he told them?
Problem is they didn't put a lot of doorways to tall walls, and
that's what they needed. They needed more.
They needed a
windshield.
They needed a mystery house.
Weird hallways.
He told the great story. I think it was like. Because he was like recording with Rick Ross, the producer, I believe, and he was like, it was at the height of
Rick Rubin.
Rick Rubin, right? It was at the height of like, like having what we have now is like you can access any song you want. But like this time it was like maybe like 10 years ago, so or a little bit less than 10 years ago, where it was that technology was getting there but wasn't there. And like Rick Rubin was like, name any song in the world, I can pull it up right now. And he's like, all right. And he named a song, and Rick Rubin typed it in. It's like, all right, name another song. He's like, and I typed it in. He's like, yeah, name another song. Like, he was so proud of this amazing device that had every song, and it just was not working.
Happy
like,
birthday. Yeah, happy birthday.
We got happy birthday. Then he was like, finally, was like, name one of your songs. One of your songs, your favorite song. And he named it. He didn't have it. He said it's like five times.
All right, get out. Everyone out. I want everyone out.
This machine's broken.
Maybe it's all the ghosts of people whose lives were ruined by glam metal now haunt that house.
So like all the people who like yeah.
There must be though. I'm fascinated by that sort of like the weird old houses around Hollywood. Have you ever been to the that murder house? There's
my friend lives across the street from that.
Really?
Which murder house?
There. The Los Feliz murder house.
There's so many murder houses.
Oh wait.
Where they got killed on Christmas Day.
And they just left the house.
And it's still to this day there are gifts on the ground like it's. Crazy.
Supposedly the neighbors don't want you to come around there, but you can go up and you can look in the house and you can see like all these unwrapped Christmas presents and stuff.
If
like
you type in Los Feliz murder house on Google, you will see it. And it's creepy. Like the husband killed himself in a really violent way. Like he drank acid after like killing his wife and
he killed him like with an axe or something.
Yeah.
Like.
Christmas morning or something.
God.
Yeah.
And so they left all the bodies in there, right?
Yeah, everything. Yeah.
All the bodies are still there.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the bodies exhibit. They're all posed at Christmas morning.
That's so fucking creepy, though.
Yeah.
That's so just the remnants of horror. And what's the deal? I think
there's an issue with who owns it and what they want to do with it.
Yeah, I think someone bought the house and then just never did anything with it. Like never even – and like uses it for storage.
Yeah.
Yeah, like they literally just like store stuff in there. And it's just some weird real estate thing.
I remember that when my friends bought their house across the street, it was like, you live across from the Los Feliz murder house. I'm like, what? And then they're freaked out. Yeah, like, because it literally is diagonal from their house.
Oh, you would just look out and just see like a face move back from the curtain in the house.
Yeah.
I watch so many fucking horror movies that I am desensitized to it, but also at the same time
addicted to jump scares
a little bit. Yeah. A little bit, so that it does. I would think like, oh well, there's not. And we also watch a ton of Destination America, which has just become the Ghost Channel. It's one of Discovery's smaller channels.
Okay.
And I don't know what the original – I don't know if it was supposed to be a travel channel or what, but what they ultimately discovered is that
ghosts are
ghosts.
Ratings. Yeah,
it's
yeah.
ghosts. So it's all it's like Paranormal Survivor and A Haunting and all these, and they're doing a fucking they're doing a live exorcism on Halloween. They're fucking doing an exorcism.
A live exorcism?
Yes,
I brought exorcism, dude. I love all this stuff. And Sheer, yeah, tell him.
For his bachelor party, I hired ghost hunters to come to our. We rented a house in Ojai, and we hired the Ojai Paranormal Investigators.
Oh my, lovely
it's
people!
Lovely people. It's a mother and son and next door neighbor team, and they came to do readings in the house, and they sent us audio tapes of us being there with some.
They were very thorough.
Rob
they came Hubel, in.
I'm
with,
going to murder you, Rob Hubel.
Dude, here's the funny thing. It's my bachelor party, so you know people are like drinking. It was like loud, and you know I'm sure people were on like mushrooms and stuff. And then these people come in like trying to do a serious like paranormal investigation with all of our comedian friends, like kind of not taking it seriously.
Drunk comedian
at all. Yeah. But then they
quieted down because they took the room over.
When they followed up with us, like it took several weeks, and they went and they listened to all of the recording because they gave everyone like a recorder.
Okay,
so we're all walking around, and they gave everyone like EVP. Uh-huh.
Yeah, like
so everyone's walking around. And so weeks later, they came back to us and they had listened to everyone's recordings, and they came in and presented to me and Sheer like all of their evidence. And a lot of their evidence, it was sort of heartbreaking for us because they would be like, okay, go to the next clip, Barbara. And it would be like, do you hear this? And you'd hear like Rob Riggle, you know, like in the kitchen, like, yo, someone give me a fucking beer, you dumbasses. And they'd be like, did you hear that? Someone get me a beer, you dumbass. And we'd be like, oh, I'm so sorry. That's our drunk friend, Rob Riggle. And they'd be like, okay, go to the next one. Go to the next one. You know, and the next one would be like, you know, Brian Husky, you know, I'm out here in the hot tub. Someone throw me a towel. And they'd be like, What did you think?
Number
about
one,
that?
You have ghosts. Number two, they love to party.
They love. They're partying ghosts.
They love to party.
Well, they said the thing that I really loved about ghosts, which was you are followed by your own ghosts. Like, you don't, like, if you go into a house, you're not getting their ghosts. Your ghosts are coming with you.
Is that true? I missed that part.
Yeah,
You're not getting their ghosts.
You're not getting their ghosts. You're getting your own ghosts.
You can't get away from your own ghosts?
No, your own ghosts are with you.
Oh, boy.
So, like, a haunted house
in my car,
is only haunted.
Or how do they get to where I'm going?
Oh, my God. My ghosts have seen me jerk off so many times. I'm sorry, ghosts.
Stop
jerking.
Like the ghost, that's the worst part of the afterlife. It's just like, oh, shit, again?
Everyone's jerking off all the time, these poor ghosts.
Finally, I can give him a message. Oh, nope, he's going
to
jerk
off. I have to watch this guitar tech get butt-fucked by his dog next to the tiny stairway one more time, I can't kill myself again.
Well, what is on that channel that you watch on Destination America, like, what are the differences in the ghost shows? Like, there can only be so many.
What is really amazing about Paranormal Survivors is that...
Paranormal Survivors.
The Paranormal Survivors is like... It's like ghost story adjacent, and as someone who produces television, it's fun to watch because you watch them stretch nothing into an entire dramatic episode. The show must cost $100 to make, but it would literally be you could make a Paranormal Survivor if you went one morning, like when you're leaving for work, and you're like, oh, I thought my keys were here, and then and you found them in the kitchen. Oh, I guess they're in the kitchen.
Yeah,
they would build a whole fucking episode around. And then the keys weren't where they normally were. And they make all these logic leaps. Like, if there was, you know, they'll find someone died in the area. And they're like, so this is definitely the ghost of... And it just, they go from your keys missing to this is definitely the ghost of an old guy who lived down the... Yeah.
Well, I will tell you
and
this.
And the reenactments are fucking...
Oh, I love a good reenactment.
Bad good?
So bad good. Yeah. I mean, like, watching the disparity between what the people look like and who they cast to play them... that's the most fun part of the
show.
I
love a good reenactment. There was like a crime show that used to do reenactments all the time when I was a kid, and it was like a real cheese
ball. Unsolved Mysteries?
Yes. I love that. Yeah. Like, I will say that I want to believe, just like Fox Mulder, but I will say that, but he's aliens, I'm more ghosts. My friend, the non-believer of ghosts, he was a producer on one of these shows, and he did it all the time. And he was the same thing. He was like, you know what? He's like, you know, it's like a lot of these EVP readings. It's a lot of these voices. He's like, and I've heard voices. I've heard them. He's like, but probably a radio frequency. Like, he had very clean, clear things. He goes, the only time I've ever seen anything that I couldn't pin down was we're in this museum. Because people would tell him, like, we have a ghost story. You have to come to our place. It was in this museum. And he was setting up the night shoot. Or it was going to be a night shoot. And he was setting it up. And he had closed the door from the outside, put up a black tarp, taped it all the way down, and then locked the door, and then put up a black tarp on the inside so it looked like it was night when they were shooting during the day. So both sides, he had done the entire thing, went into the kitchen to do the next start, came back in, both the black tarps were undone, and the door was unlocked and opened, and there was no one. He's like, there was no one else there.
What about the wind?
But couldn't unlock a door.
The wind?
Wind's pretty strong.
All right, maybe the wind. Yeah, this guy's a liar.
So did he believe from then on?
He goes, he didn't believe from then on. He goes, but that was, to me, he goes, it was an unexplained occurrence that I was the only one there, and I was gone for less than 4 minutes.
I just think a lot of, especially on these shows, people make a lot of, they go from A to Q.
Yes.
Without, because there was an episode of a show a couple days ago. And it was all about how this kid had an imaginary friend, and the imaginary friend the family believed was a demon that was making the kid act up. But when you see the reenactment, you hear the stories, you're like, no, this kid was deeply psychologically troubled. And, you know.
But that demon friend is, I've seen that premise done on a few of these shows. It's like, oh, yeah, they're possessed, but they're not possessed. They're just like kids with behavioral problems.
They have behavioral problems, but it's hard for – I really kind of want to understand the logic behind someone who goes and sits in a chair and is being interviewed and says, yeah, I definitely saw toys floating in the air. I 100% saw toys floating. And it's like – and no one has – There's and no one has any footage of this as much as people fucking record every
I know.
Completely
just orbs. Just orbs.
Mundane, inane thing. And, well, that's the thing. And there's like, no fucking.
But yeah. I would love to believe too, I just for purely fun reasons, but I feel like we've gotta like this year, we gotta footage
get
of
in
a
on
ghost
that.
And we gotta get like Bigfoot too. We gotta fucking catch Bigfoot. And we got to get like all this shit. Like if everyone's filming everything all the time, why can't we?
It would have been found. I guess you're right. It would have been found. Although I do believe that maybe aliens. I don't know. Why not? Why not? I feel like until the door has been totally closed.
Yeah, I think there's aliens. I think that we just won't ever in our time span. It wouldn't make sense geographically that something could come all the way across. You know, just geographically to me, that doesn't make sense that like something could find us and that it would be like this benevolent, like,
yeah,
like, you know, close encounters, like we're just like you.
I had always thought that the weird bald humanoids were future us.
Well, that's a theory, I think. I think that is a theory, that it is like future us, that
like
is
alternate plane of reality kind of thing.
No, yeah. No, like future, like a highly evolved version.
Oh, okay, got it.
I mean, because, you know, the little bald tiny humanoids with the big eyes. You would evolve that way if you're staring at a computer for generations You wouldn't need hair anymore. Your eyes would get really big and really sensitive to light.
Ooh, yeah. I like that.
You would have giant fingers for typing.
But are they coming back from the future to warn us, or are they just...
I think that's part of the...
Yeah, one alien comes back in the future and he accidentally prevents his mom and dad from falling in love. And so and his mom falls in love with him.
So, and that's really going to create a lot of problems.
Yeah, and then there's like a bully alien.
Hardwick, do you know about simulation theory?
Like, simulation theory is amazing.
Okay, can you lay that out a little bit? Like,
I'm confused because I've heard very drunk people tell me this and I never... And then
well,
I
think the idea...
The
I mean, stop me when I go off the rails here, but like the idea is that what we are experiencing is a simulation but it's, you know, a higher version of us has created the simulation, much the way that we have now created simulation games and stuff like that at some point we have now I don't understand where actual human existence and experience fell
that
up.
We're a layer of
I
mean, again, I'm not a scientist. I have a basic understanding of what the region that they're talking about, but I think that there is some math, I believe, that suggests that it's a possibility that this type of a universe is possible without flat out saying like we're a simulation. I think it's more the suggestion
that
it is possible that we, you know, that if you look at what it would take, you know, the computation to create a simulation that would be our reality, is that it's not impossible that could be.
Well, I even saw a clip with like Neil deGrasse Tyson, like talking to all these physicists and stuff. And at one point they kind of go down that road and there's one guy that's like, yeah, the more we look at the structure of the universe and like the math of how things are, it basically boils down to like ones and zeros. And like, it's basically the Matrix.
Right.
Like this guy pretty much says that. And they're like,
so, Somebody is playing us.
Yeah,
like, this is a simulation. Yeah. We're running on some program. We're like mining, like, you know, in those
we're
games.
We're just
collecting, like,
candy and
do podcast. Yeah. All right, 5 points. Like, you know, like, yeah, like there's somebody collecting points on us.
Go to work. 1 point. Yeah.
I mean, it would be. I kind of wonder what would happen if everyone discovered. Oh yeah, we're. I mean, if. It's one of those things where
I would get one of those. The first thing I'd do, I'd get one of those urinals. It looks like a mouth.
Yeah,
I would fuck dogs. Yeah. I fuck a lot of dogs because it's just simulation. You know? It's not real. It's like the goat simulator. You know, it's like the goat simulator. Yeah, I mean, if we were programmed enough to follow certain rules and our reality followed certain rules, then yeah, there's no. I feel like it's a completely plausible.
But then,
I mean,
why hasn't someone upgraded yet? Like, you know, why hasn't there been one person who has, like, become, like, the Neo, or forget Neo, like, even, like, a Superman? Like, you know, why, like, isn't there somebody, like, they in the simulation, like, they figured out, like, how to upgrade their own body to do something?
Well, if you were running, you know, if you were running a simulation or computer and you just set it and let it run for a while.
Right.
I don't know, you know, I don't know what would have to happen for that to all of a sudden become self-aware and start evolving itself.
Oh, so we're on a computer? Like, we're like, ultimately, we're just a program that's running.
Do you know what I love about that theory is that when you think about how unfathomable the concept of the universe is,
yeah.
At least that to me kind of explains it in a way where I go, okay, well, it's because the universe seems so impossible to me, like just the distances of the universe and the numbers and it's, you know,
yeah.
We have a medium-sized star, but other galaxies have a larger star that could fit millions of our sun. I mean, like, when you start thinking about the scope,
yeah.
Because I think a lot of times, when you think about space and the solar system, you sort of think laterally, where you go, it's us, and then
you just build out just a little bit. I feel like, right?
Yeah, you just gotta kind of go out to the edge of Pluto,
yeah.
You know, but you don't necessarily think in terms of. I'm going out this way and this way and this way and like expanding outward and just how vast and
we're all in a locker in 42nd Street just like Men in Black.
Men in Black. Oh, Men in Black, so good.
It's so
well,
good.
Also to the idea that I mean I'm bringing up things that I don't have the brain power to back up, but like the idea that time, the construct of time would remain constant. You know that time would always just be. Just marching forward, you know, like
right.
When you talk about that, like expanding in every direction of the universe and like other universes and parallel universes, like, well, couldn't time go in different directions and couldn't time go, you know, sideways? And like, I mean, this is sort of related, but like I heard someone talking about that the universe is so vast that not only is there other life out there, but there's just, you know, because we keep discovering other universes and like it's just like getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So there are not other like planets that are just like ours that could have life. There are zillions and like infinite numbers of planets where there would be life just like us, to the point where there is not just another Paul Scheer, there's like a billion Paul, like there's an infinite Sweet. Number of Paul Scheers.
My army's finally complete.
there is enough space out there that there are an infinite number of Paul Scheers who have already played out every possible possibility for you.
So there's one that's on the best career trajectory.
That's right.
There's one that's on the worst career trajectory.
That's right. There's like rock star Paul Scheer, and then there's like, you know, homeless guy that eats like, you know, dirt Paul Scheer.
Well, I'm sure he's pretty happy.
Maybe the universe is a large galactic Winchester mystery house. We're not supposed
to. Have to figure it out.
We're just totally confused. We can't figure it out because it's just like.
And Neil deGrasse Tyson is like sent there to confuse us. Maybe like. Oh wait, hey,
he's working with him.
Yeah, he's working. He's
on. Of course,
he's been sent here to. He's to be our most logical ambassador, but at the same time, keep it a little bit more mysterious. Like, here's a door.
Don't let him get too close. Yeah. Let him feel like you're telling him stuff, but
yeah, show him a stairwell, but then it leads to a wall.
Yeah,
so
we'd
you're
never
fine.
Be able to. You know, when I think about like how you, if someone somehow found video proof, like, well, okay, here's Jesus Christ, and he's saying a bunch of stuff, and it's antithetical to what you thought this book was saying. No one would believe it. Like if you said
that's what crazy people are dismissed, like,
yeah,
quickly, you know, yeah.
If you found proof of the universe, like actual proof of the universe. This is actually what it is. Most people will be like, no, it's not.
Yeah, I think that there's a fine line between a genius, you know, person that can solve all this and a crazy person. And I think that you can actually go crazy thinking about this stuff too. You know,
like, well, because there's no answer, right? There's no way to know, right?
There is an answer, but I don't know if there's a way for our brains to understand it. I feel like there are things at play in the universe that we are literally not evolved to understand. It's sort of like that.
Absolutely.
There's sort of like in Defending Your Life when Rip Torn, when Albert Brooks goes, where were you? And he was like, you wouldn't understand. I'm not talking down. You wouldn't understand. He was like, try me. I was trapped near the inner circle of fault. I don't get it. Yeah, I know. You know, like I feel like there are things about the universe that we don't even have the mental tools to begin to comprehend yet.
I wonder what is evolving faster for us, like our bodies or our minds? Like are there parts of our brains that are evolving?
I don't know if our brains are evolving that much anymore. I think and I'm sure an evolutionary biologist can totally shame me on the thread here, but I believe that our brains in relation to our body size, our brain size cases, I think we're not I think our brains aren't really evolving.
Well, I don't even mean in terms of like size, like, but aren't there parts of our brain that are becoming more defined and like stronger? Like, it seems like there would have to be.
Our ability,
I think
we're to getting Instagram weaker in front of a
like,
Vista.
Yeah, but I think we're getting devolving. Weaker. Like, there, I feel like I read and listen to all these things about how our generation is, or not our generation, but the generation actually younger than us is losing creativity. Like this whole idea of like the Lego playset is probably one of the worst things for children because it's really cool to build something neat, you know, if you want to build a Back to the Future DeLorean, an Ecto-1, whatever, but you're taking away all the imagination because it's like, no, this is the only way to do it. Here are the pieces, and this is how you finish the project. And so everything is becoming like that. Even like, you know, things like Blue Apron.
You're talking about sort of the play sets that are like preset Legos that, as opposed to
you build one thing, but that's what's selling. That's what people do. Like even like Blue Apron is a thing where it's like, get a meal. We're going to send you the exact ingredients, and you're going to make the thing. It's like people
so much easier though.
Yeah, and it does. It's great, but I think that that's it. And they're
probably a sponsor of this podcast.
No,
but they could be.
They're great. They're amazing. But that whole idea, like our creativity is going lower and lower because what you would want kids to do is have a tub of Legos and build whatever they want.
I will say that our smartphones have completely eliminated the need to retain any information. Like we basically have external hard drives
and interact everything and interact socially. You know, there is no more like I walk up to a girl. I'm married, so I would never do this.
With that's my wife not is listening. What I heard.
But, you know, you like when I was in college, you know, you had to like walk up to someone and go, "Hey, I'm so and so," and then you had to be interesting or funny or whatever and ask them out on. But you don't do that anymore. Like there is no more social.
In the old days, you had to draw a picture of your dick and hand it to someone.
This is what my dick looks like. And anyway, I wonder about that too. Like the social ramifications of all of that.
I even think like the idea of telling a story. Like when I was a kid, we had a lot of pictures. But right now, when I look back at those pictures, I don't have like 55 pictures from one event. I probably have like 20. And then you fill in the gaps with how you remember it and stuff like this. Here, everything – I mean, I know I'm not saying anything revolutionary, but it's so well documented that you don't even have to use that part of your brain because it's like, oh, no, I have a
picture. But if all of this is hampering the evolution of our brains, then why weren't like early settlers like the most genius people ever? You know, like
– Well, I think they lacked the ability to connect with anyone kind of outside their own little circle.
Yeah.
So it's not like a lot of new information was coming in. It was a very vertical, you know, their knowledge was very vertically passed down.
Mm-hmm. By the way, they built houses, got fire, and they made meals. I mean, they did a good job. They had
a bunch of kids. Yeah. A couple of them would survive out of 10, you know. And then they planted a farm,
died of tuberculosis at the age of 27. It was great.
You were on the Oregon Trail. You died of dysentery, and that was that. But I think that now I've always thought since the beginning of the computer era, I've always believed that mankind is unconsciously creating the tools to evolve itself. So because we don't evolve, because you know we're not evolving fast enough in nature, or because the clay God molded us out of didn't leave enough room for new stuff, that we're creating the means to evolve. So that would either mean some type of an integrated, you know, if you're kind of going in the Kurzweil direction, or some type of integrated technology, integrated in humanity, or we are building the thing that will replace us. You know, we all get
nanobots and ready to go. I mean, we all become like robots, super robots.
So I think that that's probably, you know, we're building the thing that will be the next level of evolution. But I don't think we are.
But so much of our focus is the entertainment applications of these devices. You know, like we become obsessed with like, well, I'm going to take a picture of my dick and, you know.
Oh, yeah. Idiocracy is totally coming true. Yeah.
So like, wait, there's so, no, by the way, watch Idiocracy now.
It's fucking really funny how prophetic that movie
is. It's terrifying. You watch and you're like, oh, this is happening.
Yeah.
Like, this is all happening.
Yeah, our president's – we're totally elected gladiator. Yeah. You know, like
– we're close to it. So we're basically saying that like we'll eventually become, and this is an old reference, I apologize, the Teddy Ruxpin of the future, which is like we'll just be this soft, fleshy thing, but then you put a tape in our back and we become super smart.
Yeah, or you know, basically.
Or grubby, or grubby.
I guess Neo was kind of a Teddy Ruxpin because he plugged in the.
Yeah, he's like, we all have to get our inner Teddy Ruxpins out.
Yeah, that's really kind of what it was.
I want somebody to make a graphic of this podcast of three of us as like Teddy Ruxpin characters.
Get our tapes in. What are our tapes? What tapes are we listening to today?
You know, and we don't have time to go into it, but just to let you know, I feel like there's a lot of crossover between supernatural shows and true crime shows.
Yeah.
Lydia and I watch a shit ton of that stuff because Investigation Discovery is the other channel that has all of the true crime stuff. But there's a show called Homicide Hunter, and it's fucking great.
Whoa.
It's this guy named Joe Kenta, and he was a homicide detective in Colorado Springs, you know, a couple decades ago. And he's just kind of like, if you cast an old grizzled detective, it's this guy. But he solved something like 400 homicides in Colorado Springs.
Wow. Jeez.
Which apparently it was a very deadly place.
Yeah.
And it's just him. He narrates and he comes out and they're in their fifth season. And it's like this guy plays him young.
But it's him talking about how he solved these
murder
heroes.
He solved the crimes and they have the reenactment, but he kind of voices it over. And the reenactments are pretty good. And
wow.
It's a fucking
homicide
great.
Hunter.
And he's just this kind of guy that, you know. As soon as that guy got out of the van, all the bells went off in my head. Like he's one of those guys. Oh, what's this? A footprint? Hello. Like it's a lot of that kind of stuff. But he's really great, and it's a really fun show.
I love
when
you can find
Hunter.
Somebody like that. Like I feel like Nathan For You did a thing. The first season where they hire like a private investigator, and like he was a real asshole to Nathan, like a real jerk. And then he got his own reality show, like where he's like going around like being like a bail bondsman or something. But like his like all you need to do is find that person that has some sort of personality, just like makes him a little bit more interesting. And then the Norman, you got a show.
I'm telling you, Homicide Hunter, Lieutenant Joe Kenta, it's fucking fantastic.
I cannot wait.
I know you will. Are you still doing How Did This Get Made?
Yes.
What was the most recent?
The most recent, we did a double feature of Furious 7, which is a favorite. Like that's thank God this got made, we call it, because we love those movies so much. And then Maximum Overdrive, which Machines taking over. There it goes together. Maximum Overdrive is one of the most insane movies
I've
ever
God
seen.
This got made like a very religious angle.
We sit back, we talk about
take a moment of silence. Yeah.
Crank, Con Air, the Furious 7 movies, all those movies kind of fall into Face Off. They fall under that umbrella.
Maximum Overdrive. So I remember liking Maximum Overdrive when I was young.
I think it's the best movie that we've done on How This Get Made as far as it's insane. Like,
Stephen King.
There's
a four-page short story that he turned into a 90-minute movie.
Was that a Bachman?
It might have been. And he is totally high on coke the entire time, and admittedly so. Like, he's like, I don't remember shooting this. I was high on cocaine. Was so dangerous with the crew that like one guy got blind because he was like he wanted to put real lawnmower blade, like all the. All
who was
electronics.
This? Who are you talking about?
Stephen King, because he wrote and directed it.
Oh, okay.
And so he wanted everything to look real, and they had like a lawnmower that came to life, and he's like, let's put real blades in it. And the stunt guy was like, you're not even going to see the blades. You're just going to see them. He's like, let's put real blades in it. They put real blades in it. The blade cut something on a lawn, shot into the stunt guy's eye, and like he got blinded and sued the movie for like $16 million.
Oh, my
like,
God.
The movie is off the rails. Insane. Like, insane to that there's no real ending. There's no real bad guy. Some equipment is coming alive. Some equipment not. Like, some guns fire themselves because they're robots. Other guns, totally
fine. So sort of like Transformers without the transforming.
Yeah, there's no reason for it. And there's just a lot of text at the front and the back that kind of sum it up, but don't make any sense. Like, we took it line by line. I was like, explain this. It does not make sense.
So Maximum Overdrive. That's so weird. We had an accidental Stephen King marathon this weekend.
Oh, really?
We watched three movies. One of them not a Stephen King movie, Beetlejuice.
Uh-huh.
Then Running Man.
Okay.
Which was Bachman.
Amazing.
And then Creepshow.
Oh, great. Wow.
But all three movies, completely selected randomly, all had the catchphrase, it's showtime! Beetlejuice says it, Richard Dawson says it, and Leslie Nielsen says it in Creepshow.
Man. Wow. It is showtime.
Beetlejuice, by the way, totally holds up.
Does it
really? Running Man, oh my God, so beautifully.
I haven't seen Beetlejuice in a while.
It's so funny that Beetlejuice holds up so beautifully, and Batman does not hold up. Like, Beetlejuice feels timeless, but Batman just feels like, this is very...
You know why? Because I think that Beetlejuice is, like, in that house. And it doesn't, like, kind of... It's much more of, like, a family story, and it's gothic in its way, I guess. Like, but Batman, it's weird.
Beetlejuice is fucking, it's still fantastic. Running Man is still great.
See, Running Man is awesome. Yeah, I love that.
And Creepshow is really fun. So Maximum Overdrive.
Maximum Overdrive is worth watching because it's I mean, it's the only movie that Stephen King directed. So he wrote and directed his own thing. And it's arguably, I think, the most confusing version of anything. And if you have your druthers, look up the trailer. The trailer is amazing. The trailer is Stephen King talking to camera, and he's got like this like weird like almost cross-eyed thing going on, and he's standing in front of a truck. He's like, "Hi, I'm Stephen King, and I'm going to scare the crap out of you." Like, you know, it's like really, it's great. It's all one right. of the best trailers
I haven't seen. I don't think I've seen it since seeing it on Cinemax when I was a kid.
It's super fun. It's like, it's, you know, we always try to find those movies that are fun bad.
Yeah.
And this is so enjoyable.
I had fun coming on your show when we did Season of the Witch.
Season of the Witch, which is an interesting one. Nicolas Cage movie that won the Oscar for Best Script.
What?
Yeah, the Oscar Fellowship Award. So basically the Oscars put on this award. They find the best script, and that movie, Season of the Witch, won that year. And then it was made into a movie.
Before they saw it.
But yeah, so I guess before it was even made. It was like the blacklist version.
Well, I guess
of,
that's
like,
how that got made.
Yeah, I guess it.
That's crazy.
But how did it
that
get
movie?
To where it was? That's a thing. It's like, I don't know. Because
it's not a particularly original story.
No, not at all.
That's what?
Yeah. It's a real bizarre one.
I'm really baffled by that concept.
Can
you imagine having
the movie?
The basic story is that Nicolas Cage needed money because of tax stuff.
His island.
Buying dinosaur bones.
Yeah.
Which I totally understand.
Look, I'd like to buy dinosaur bones.
And so, yeah, it's just this weird.
It's
like a demon hunter movie
in an old castle. It's fairly unmemorable. It's
kind of Middle Ages tale.
Like of a witch. Yeah, they hunt a witch or something.
They hunt
a witch. Possesses different people.
But it's
people.
Not particularly.
It's no good.
Yeah. It was not good.
But it was fun to do the podcast.
Yeah, it was fun. I would love to.
You know,
have
Rob
you back.
Hubel was on episode number 2 of the Nerdist podcast.
I remember that because was that in your old office? Like, was that.
I think so.
Yeah, that was a long time
that
ago.
That was 5.5 years ago.
Yeah, I don't remember
episode number 2.
I wonder what we talked about.
Who's episode number 1?
Tom Lennon.
Oh wow.
Tom Lennon number 1, Rob Hubel number 2.
Look at that.
I did the Nerdist podcast
number 3
in your
John
house.
Number 4. You did it at the house. Yeah.
I did the house, and that was really fun. But that was still in the early ages of podcasting, I imagine.
Yeah.
That was in the first 100.
That was in the old house. That was
I feel like that must have been
Now you guys are back.
Now we're back.
We're back. But you're back and you have a show which we did not talk about.
Well,
at all.
It is about the figuring out the universe.
Yeah. Well, but with the level of study and education about astronomy that you have
now, I would love that. Like that should be a podcast. Just people like it's no one of great minds. Just people who are interested. Going, I think this is what I think it is. And it's just a real debate, but not
I think that, I don't think they should say I think. I should think they should just make the assertions like that's 100% true. Because there's an old Ben Stiller sketch called B-minus Time Traveler.
Oh, that's my favorite. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't.
It was the day that Little Vin Infamy, 1940 or 19.
just with Washington. Well, what? Am I retreating? Am I attacking? I don't know. I just remember something about shoes.
Well, that's how I feel a lot of times, like on podcasts, like talking about stuff, because I have a lot of half facts in my brain.
Yeah.
You know, like I have a lot of like, oh, what's the thing about this theory and da da da. And like when I listen to it or when I read about it initially, I'm like, oh, this is legit and real and I'm going to remember this. And then when I start talking about stuff, I'm like, I can't quite remember all of the facts, but I do think that
it goes back to you don't need to because you got the internet now.
Yeah,
so you don't
someone can be
anything.
Intrigued by you and then they'll Google it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, though, this would literally be the worst time for a worldwide apocalypse to happen because by and large, people are the least skilled. The average person is the least skilled.
Going back to the pioneer people, I don't think we could do what the pioneer people did. Right now, crops.
Yeah. I mean, you can imagine the pioneers. Basically, if someone's like, "Oh, by the way, there was an apocalypse," they'd be like, "So,
sure."
Well,
the bison out there. Can we make another blanket?
Look how panicked you get when your phone dies. You're like, "Oh fuck, I don't know anyone's phone number. I don't know. Yeah. Like, I don't know my wife's phone number. I don't.
You don't have to look at it. You just type in
her
name.
But if my phone dies, I am like completely impotent. Like,
yep.
I just like I
luckily
can't do
have
anything.
Been dating my
you've been
my
dating
wife
your wife
for I've been dating my wife for a long time. We're getting serious. But that's
she's seeing other husbands.
Well, we'll see. You know, we're talking about starting. trying to go steady as husband and wife. But I knew her at a time when they had to type in her number, and now I don't have to do that anyway. That's how I memorize it.
My wife, I mean, most people are probably, they don't do this, but like I still have my wife's, you know, from when I met her, I put her first and last name in my phone, and I still have that. Like when she calls me.
Oh, yeah, yeah, me too.
Yeah, because like that's when I met her. But now when she calls me, and if she calls me from the car just to fuck with me, we do that a lot. She'll be like, "Why does my first and last name come up on your like? Why doesn't it say wife? You know?" And I'm like, "Because that's not how the night that I met you and I got your fucking phone number from you when we were. That's how I put it in my phone, and it's never changed."
You know? June puts me in her phone under this like dumb name that she, and it's been going on for years, that whenever she puts me in a group email, everyone sees the dumb name of me that like
a little pet name.
It's like I think it's like Special Bunny. It is. It's Special Bunny. That's what it is.
So,
I don't
like
you guys.
Everybody sees
Special Bunny, but I didn't know that it was okay.
Got yourself like 10,000 Special Bunny tweets.
No, it happens on every group email because everyone goes, Special Bunny. I'm like, just change it. Let's put it to Paul. Like, you don't need Special Bunny, but. My wife has – everybody in her phone has a different name. Like, they're people – like, they all have their own nicknames that all come up in a very weird
way. Well, when I was dating Janet, I put her number in a – I'd put a separate contact so if anything happened to me, they would call her so it was in case of emergency.
Oh, yeah.
And her number. But whenever she would call, it would just come up as in case of emergency.
That's
and I just never changed it. So if Janet ever calls now, it just says in case of emergency calling. I never changed it. I probably changed it. She's probably not the
Yeah, you probably want to. Yeah, you gotta change that.
Something
up.
Happened to me, and someone called her. She'd be like, "Yeah, so we're not together anymore. Yeah. Why are you?
Oh, what happened? He got hit by a bus. Oh, well, I'm sorry to hear that.
You should probably inform his girlfriend.
Well, tell everybody. Somebody made a good point. Like somebody made a point. Like, do not put your case of emergency someone that is very close to you because chances are they may be with you
That's
in that
true.
Accident. Like
they
you know,
were
it's
burned
like
alive.
Yeah, like
also,
put it like two steps removed. The person that you're not on a road trip with,
or they're the ones who murdered you and then drank acid on Christmas Day.
Yes,
exactly. It's not helpful to anybody.
I go, if we do another crash test, which we did not talk about,
yes,
we should go to those murder houses.
Just so you know, crash test. Robin and I did our first ever comedy special on a bus.
By the way, we're the worst promoters ever.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
We've been talking for an hour.
But we talk about
the universe, man. Your show's just a simulation anyway.
It is,
bro.
It is.
Yeah, we did a comedy special on a bus that went all over Hollywood.
A glass bus that like is state of the art, and you can like yell at people in the street. They can hear you. You can hear them.
It was basically a stand-up show. It started off as a stand-up show where we have like Natasha Leggero and Aziz and all these people, and then like, gradually we stop at different people's houses, like Rob Corddry
Aziz Plaza,
Aubrey Plaza.
That's Aubrey Plaza, Aziz's kid.
Jack McBrayer.
We have a reunion of Reno 911, which is really cool on it. What's cool about it is
didn't ask, Chris. We're just telling you what's cool about our comedy
I want to know what's cool about it. I want you to walk me through all the cool points.
We like that we didn't talk about it.
We'll talk about it now. It's like the thing that we did was like we tried to do a UCB style show, like an Upright Citizen Brigade style show in our special. So we did one take. We never rehearsed it. We never did it. We did 6 hours, and we whittled it down to like the best hour version of it. So it feels like a lot of the times people that we meet on the street, like Aziz and Aubrey and Rob, the first time we saw them was when we pulled up to their fictional houses.
Yeah, we basically texted people and said, "Hey, what about doing a bit with us on the show tonight? Are you available?" Like,
give them no time.
Yeah.
You know, it's actually very generous of you because when someone asks you to do something, I got to prepare something for that.
Well, you know what? It actually worked out great because the whole thing is super funny and like everyone that's seen it loves it. And it is just one of those things like it was an event. Like it's just like it happened on this night and everyone showed up with their A game and did a funny bit.
Earl Sweatshirt improvises a music video, one take music video. Like,
wow.
Yeah, it's really kind of neat. They made Paramount smell like pot. All of Paramount.
We take the bus and we basically crash through the gate on the Paramount lot and we met them on the New York on the backstage. It looks like New York City, and you know because it's you know he's a rapper. We got to make it look urban,
cool.
Sure.
You know, so that made a lot of sense. But they were smoking so much weed outside that like the bus just was overpowered with weed.
We were overpowered, but like the block was overpowered. Like the security guard had to come up to one of our people and be like, "Hey." this whole area, like it's like it was giant. It wasn't like, oh, those guys, like, keep it in there. It was like, no, you stunk up everything,
all of it,
and they're outside. Like it makes no sense. They're just outside.
You ruined the out of doors.
We ruined Hollywood.
Where is Crash Test?
You can get it on Vimeo in demand, or just go to crashtestshow.com. But it's only $3.99, super cheap. We kept it cheap. We kind of produced it ourselves to a certain extent, and so yeah, it's out there.
Congratulations!
Yeah.
I'm very excited to see
it. We originally were going to charge $4, and then we're like, you know what?
Let's save people a little cash, you know? Yeah, so let's charge $3.99.
Yeah. Psychologically, it's better.
Yeah. We want to do more. I think we really want to do it down at like San Diego Comic-Con. Like in the craziness of that, like it would be so fun to interact with people and get out there and just see what's going on. It would be a clusterfuck, but it would be really fun.
And you know, it's one of the things that I absolutely – that kind of makes me jealous about – improvisation as opposed to have like spending 2 years to craft the perfect meticulous set is that you because of your skill set and the people that you know, you could literally walk out of this room with your iPhone, shoot a special that could be just as funny as something that someone spent 2 years writing, and then it's just you could just make a thing every day. You could just make a thing.
Well, I think that the whole trick there is just having a really good editor. We had a really good editor, because you end up with a lot of stuff like, oh, that was a funny idea, it did not work.
Did not work.
You know, and we ended up cutting out
they did Star Wars.
But they just
improvised it. Yeah. So they found
oh, that works. Yeah, cool.
But we literally just like ditched entire chunks. We're like, oh, that doesn't really work. That's not like our strongest stuff, and just kept in like what happened to work. So you just get a good editor to cut out all the shit.
And I think we're always trying to be a little bit more critical than most, because I think, to me, I always feel like shorter is better. You know, it's like I think you just want to keep it as compact as you can and as funny as you can do it. I feel like that's, you know, it just always seems like it's better in that version.
Let me ask you a question that may be tough for you to ask, and then we'll wrap up. This might be tough for you to answer.
I do not fuck dogs.
Are you sure? How do you explain this?
We were told, guys, we have our publicist here. They were supposed to say this was off limits. You're not supposed to ask him about fucking dogs.
You are not supposed to ask about our relationship to dogs.
I didn't volunteer.
You volunteered.
He said he had a tough question. What else could it be?
Well, it wasn't in the neighborhood of that. I mean, I was creeping slowly up to it to the side of your bed, like the way your dog creeps up to fuck you while you're sleeping. I'm sorry. I just thought maybe you'd want to talk about it. You know, it's like, you know, we're breaking a lot of stories in the podcast now. So I thought maybe I would just give Deadline a break and break the Rob Hubel dog fucking story.
My biopic.
Yeah. So I guess that's it.
No, what is your real question?
I've only been once in the last, I almost feel like maybe in the last year. But it started to feel like a little bit. Like, some of the UCB audiences seem a little hipstery to me now. Like, not as in the earlier days, like, it was real, felt like real comedy fans. Like, they went to have fun. And now it kind of feels a little hipstery and
insidery, you mean? Like,
I
hear what you're saying.
Just a little defensive and more judgy base. And it's not based on a set that I had. It was the show overall, the audience felt. And it was like, did you come here because you heard this was a cool place to go?
Yeah,
or what?
I will say that when we first came out to LA, we came from New York, obviously, and we were doing shows there. New York audiences are great, and they're very they're just in it with you. And when we first came in doing shows out here, I remember going like, oh, I feel like judged. I feel like they're like they're looking at us like, is that funny? Like looking at the people to the left and their right.
To know if it's okay for them to laugh at it.
Yeah, and I remember then we broke through that ceiling where I felt like, okay, now it's a comedy. Like now UCB is cultivating this comedy audience. But I think the location of where it's at
on a given night,
you can have a little bit more hipster to comedy fan, because I think it is a thing to do. I think,
and
it's more
people who are more like funny, as opposed to like people who are like, oh, I'm just here to surrender myself and laugh.
It's the same reason why
I felt that at other places too. They're like, if you go to do a show, you know, at any other place around Hollywood, sometimes I think it's just like sometimes just comedy fans, like because if you're a fan of comedy. Eventually, obviously your tastes evolve and you become more discerning. And so the bar is raised all the time.
Yeah.
And you don't laugh at the same things all the time. So, I've definitely felt that.
But I also feel like it's the same reason why people, like bands, are like, I don't like to play in L.A. Because I think the bands that people who play in L.A., they're like, the audience is like, cool. That was a great song.
Yeah.
Great set. Cool. Like, you know, New York would be like, ah, yeah, like just dancing. And I feel like there is a coolness factor to it. Rob and I do our show, the Crash Test Show, that we base the show on, like to a very the audience comes back again and again and again. And it's a great audience. And I feel like we've cultivated to a certain extent, and even our Facebook show that we do, where we improvise off of people's Facebook pages, like a little bit more of an audience that comes back. So that's a nice buffer, I think, to always make sure that, all right, well, if you have 25% hipsters, we're going to give you 75. We'll surround that by 75% of laughers. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's, I don't know.
Because I would always notice a difference when I had been on the road for a while and I would go perform in LA or like UCB or any of the local shows. I would have to structure the bits differently because if they seemed too structured, which is very important when you're on the road, then people don't trust it, and so they're a little – they get thrown off, and so you have to kind of evolve your presentation to kind of – to account for the fact that they are kind of comedy – like mega comedy fans are a little bit comedy hipsters.
And they know where you're going.
They know where you're going, and they don't – if they smell a bit, then they're immediately – that's not to say – like there are certain types of bits that they will tolerate, but it's definitely the presentation has to be a little looser and a little bit different.
Well, I felt that too at different shows too, like at different levels of savviness at specific stand-up shows. You know, like I remember doing like Death Ray and stuff at UCB, and I remember being very intimidated by that crowd at first because they seemed like so evolved comedically that I remember just – and it's all perception. Like I would just get in my head, you know, to do that show. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know what that is. I don't know whether it's just that like you know, when it's a bunch of smart comedy people, I don't know, you just feel like you're being judged a little more.
Well, I'll say too, like sometimes the league, when the league comes back, we do things where we go out on the road and do stand-up. Now, I'm not a stand-up, but I know like they kind of count on me to go out because I perform. So they go, oh, well, you perform, you're stand-up. I'm like, well, I'm not really a stand-up. And they go, well, I'll just do bits. And so I very quickly learned on the first two shows out on the road, like, ooh, UCB style, LA, New York style bits.
Loose bits.
Are not
they don't work as well on the road.
They're not getting like the irony of it or anything. So I was like, I need to like figure out how to do stand up. And not a lot, like just like 10, 15 minutes of it, like to make sure that I could go out there and do my thing and be done. And when I did that, I refused to perform at any of the LA like Meltdown or UCB. I just kind of went out to like the Ice House in Pasadena, and I went out to the Improv, and I went to all these other places that are like quote unquote like real stand up places, because the audiences there are, I don't know, they're not going to let you get away with certain stuff. Like I feel like if I did my set that I was doing it on the league, which I did on the road, they would kill at UCB and flat out bomb, which it did. And I felt like, and I was like, shit.
But you can't do the reverse either.
Exactly. So like I never did my like stand up. What I did on the road is only like stays in certain places.
You know what it is? I think it's that – I think these audiences in particular, the hipstery audiences, they want to feel like whatever they're seeing is super authentic and in the moment. They want to feel like it's really authentic. And so if it feels like a bit that you've constructed or done before, then they're instantly like, hey, what? Well, what? And I think it's just they need things to feel like they're super in the moment and super real.
Even if you have like a book in front of you, like I think Paul F. Tompkins is one of the best guys at doing something that seems so off the cuff and it's perfectly like kind
of. And then all of a sudden
together.
He's going down this deep trench from a tangent. It's fucking, yeah, he's it's incredible.
Amazing.
At
and I think Louis does it. I've seen Louis too. It's like, like Louis makes you think like, oh, I'm just thinking this right now, and it's like, and I think that's the trick of like oh, are they just coming up with that in the moment? And I think it's like kind of that building. I mean, you would know too. It's like that building of those segues to kind of feel like you can kind of tangentialize for a little bit, but knowing that you're going to hit this one part and then really, it's like almost you have to take them on a detour to get them lost before you kind of can hit into.
Yeah,
the bit.
Patton's really good at that too.
Oh yeah,
I mean, masterful.
I saw the first time I saw Patton out in L.A. I was like, holy shit, he improvised that entire stand-up routine. And then I saw him like a week later doing a very similar thing. I was like, and it was like, I'm like, I've been performing comedy forever.
I like that he tricked you. Like that you got fooled.
And
I
was like, what? Oh, but it is. It's like when you have that in the moment thing, you feel like, oh, that's so natural. It's so.
But you know, the thing is, it should feel that way because that's what I think, that's when comedy is working its best. And that's what's so great about a fantastic improv show, is that an audience should feel like They have all come together as a little mini temporary community to experience this one thing together, and it should feel special, and it should
and it will never happen again.
It should feel unique, and it'll never happen again. And with stand-up, it's difficult to do that because you really do have to hone down and you have to craft the
– because you know that like when you craft like the boom, boom, boom at the end of a joke – it's going to hit – like that's the way it's going to hit. It's never going to hit if you're like – if you lazily get there. It's, it's not – you know, it's if a you, weird
if you
middle.
If you take time off from stand-up, like if you're working or something and you don't go on the road for like a month, does it completely fuck you up?
It doesn't fuck me up, but it does – there is a little bit of a
– trying to get back into the
– it's sort of like – you know like when you – Paul and I go to the same gym.
Yeah.
And so
– hey, where's my phone? Don't worry about it. What gym is this?
Well, you're not allowed.
Yeah.
It's just the two of us. Yeah. No dog fuckers.
Yeah.
Says on the gym. It's no dog fuckers.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty bold.
It's run by a dog.
Yeah.
And so he hates it. Really,
yeah, he feels like he's been really hurting his
just in case my mom's listening, I don't fuck dogs.
Your mom all of a sudden gets the podcast.
I make love to them. I make sure they're getting something out of it. I'm not, I'm a nuts. I'm not
selfish.
I like
all things considered and.
And dog fuckers.
So you guys go to the same gym.
Yeah. I would love to hear the Dog Fuckers podcast, but on NPR.
Anyways, great dog.
You're listening to
the Bull
member supported National Public Radio, Dog Fuckers.
Wait, well, what did they say?
Fucking dogs.
You guys go to the same gym.
Yeah, we go to the same gym. And it's like,
is this a shirts off gym or shirts on?
Pants off, shirts on.
Yeah. Sometimes you see Shia LaBeouf in there. It's cowboy boots.
He's wearing cowboy boots and jeans.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Totally true.
Oh, boy.
But it's like when you haven't worked out in like a month and that first time you go back and you're like, oh, yeah, this. It feels like that. Like there's a little bit of a...
A warm-up phase.
Even as long as I've been doing it, if I take like a month off or 3 weeks off, there's a little bit of a, I got to get the rhythm of it.
What's your writing process like? Do you write all the time or do you like... Or are you like... writing towards an hour, like what, how do you approach writing?
It's there's no, I don't have a set way. It's just I'll jot notes down. I've been doing the this beta test show at Meltdown where it's all new material, or it has to be new spins if it's old material. It's a workshop show, and so in Evernote basically I create a note that has a bunch of new stuff or whatever I'm going to try in the next set, in the next beta test set. And if things work on existing stuff, then I'll try them on the road. But, you know, I was really disappointed. I just had 2 weeks off, and it was amazing. And in my head, I thought, well, I'm just going to write an hour a day while I'm on vacation.
Yeah.
And I didn't, because I just didn't want to do anything.
Yeah.
But I do want to – I'm shooting a special in January, and so I do want to get into the habit now every morning, even just for a half hour, just sitting down, and it doesn't matter what it is. If I'm adding to an existing bit or listening to an old set and trying to craft it, I'm now in this phase where I'm trying to tighten all the screws. I'm not trying to bring in a bunch of new stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at all the existing stuff and figuring out where's the fat, what can I trim, where's the air, what can I squeeze out, can I add things here and there to tighten this all up. So that's where I'm at now.
Yeah, that's the hardest stuff to do, and essentially, because that's like where, because I feel like in the limited experience that I have had doing it, like when you do hit that one wording that switches at the end, it's just like, oh, wait a second, that went from like a five or a six to like a nine.
And you usually just don't know until you're doing it, so you just have to do it a lot. It's very hard to do. It's very hard to do it at home. It's rare that I will write a bit at home, do it on stage exactly the way I wrote it at home, and it works. Like there's always a bit of a finding it with the audience. The crowd
too, and are you right? I mean, these are dumb questions, but are you writing it out full, or are you writing it out like beats? Like
beats. Yeah, I write it out like an outline. So it's, you know, here's the general thing that I want to talk about. So it's, you know, ghost shows. And then I'll write some things like bullet points. These are some things that are weird. And then under each of those bullet points could be like sub layers of how the joke might work, or what I think a couple of joke points might be. And then I'll say where I think it can tie to something else in my set. And then I'll say it out loud. And my brain will fill in it'll make it conversational.
And do you say it out loud for the first time at home or on stage?
On stage. Yeah, I don't. Because it's just. It's pointless for me to say it at home, out loud at home, because I don't. There's no audience there to react off it, so I don't know. Yeah. It's just like. I think that's good if you first start stand up and you just want to hear.
The best thing that Aziz showed me was listening to an old set right before getting on stage and doing a new set. Like, so you're hearing yourself do your last version of that set, and you can kind of pick things up in that moment, and then you go out on stage.
That's really smart. Yeah.
It was one of the – and it makes you look a little antisocial before you go do your set, but at the same time – you're kind of judging yourself, and then you go, "Oh, I know how to do that."
I think it's very hard for an entire set to, you know, the next time I do a set, I'm going to change all these things. I kind of change incrementally, so because I don't want to overwhelm the set, especially if you're trying stuff.
Yeah.
So I'll know, like, oh, this bit about my dad. The next time I do it, I'm going to sneak this and this and this in and see which one of those works.
Got it.
But then a lot of what I do on stage is kind of riffy anyway, so I'm supposed to really go back and listen to my old sets, and I don't do that as much.
It's so funny because you bemoan like your lack of discipline in that, and like I feel like improv in a way, like I love it, but it has fucked me up in the way that I am only in love with something for like one time. You know what I mean? Like
like
sometimes people ask me to come on and do stand up or whatever, so I'll write like 10 minutes. And I'll go and do it, and then I just don't want to do it again. Like, I just don't want to do it
again. I love the crafting process. I love it's like whittling. I mean, it's basically just like you have this block of wood, and you whittle it down, and then, you know, at a certain point, you go, it's done. The bummer thing that happens is when if I did a special or I've done a bit a bunch of times, and I don't do it anymore, and then I think of a bunch of new tags, and I'm like, shit, but it's too late because I can't I can't go back and do it again.
Yeah.
But
aren't we the best talking about our comedy?
We figured out comedy and the universe.
We're the guys, best. Really
in life,
did
life after death.
Simulation theory, ghosts, dog fucking, dog stairs.
We really did.
We just brought that up again.
Well, guys, look, I'm here to promote one thing. No. That's my doggy stairs. My line of doggy stairs. I mean, what more
could doggy stairs.
What more could the podcast listener want? I mean, we've
really
answered so many questions.
This is a dense 92 minutes that we've really put together. Yeah. But
we're replacing. We're going to be the new Hostful episodes right here.
The new Hostful, yeah. Myra and Ray are out. Cheer and Hubel are in.
Get them out.
That's it. One of you's got to collect guitars and talk about NASA, and then the other. Feel like that'll be you.
Yeah, I'll do it. I'm in.
And then you've got a hat and that plaid shirt, so that's more of the Jonah.
Yeah, I got Jonah's bit. I got to do that.
Yeah, and Jonah does have a bit about ejaculating on dogs. So
does he really?
Yeah, all work.
Jeez.
He does have a bit about coming on dogs' faces.
I got to shake this. How long is it going to take me to shake this fucking
Forget
bit?
Yeah. You know, no one will remember. You know, no one.
That's the beauty of it. Is nothing sticks anymore because
nothing. Yeah, this is like the controversies of today.
By the time someone gets around to even tweeting, they get bored in the middle of the tweet.
Yeah, they're like, hey, what's
amazing to me? This is the total. This is a total side thing. Before we wrap, this is amazing to me. Is South Park is consistently like I think South Park has surpassed the Simpsons was very influential to me for a lot of years, but I think South Park has surpassed every comedy show in terms of consistency. That for 17 or 18 seasons,
absolutely,
the show is still funny, edgy, incredible satire. But it is as sensitive as people are about things today, and as outraged as people love to be. I cannot believe what that show is able to get away with. It seems to violate every rule of what our culture gets pissed off about.
Well, what are you thinking of lately that they did that?
I'm just watching.
Well, they came in.
They've got the perfect time. They got grandfathered in.
And they came in with, like, I think it was like Jesus. Like, it was a Jesus Christmas card. That
Spirit
was like,
of Christmas.
Yeah, and that was like how it started. And it's like they never went backwards. Like, you know, so they never got like – you know, they always, I think, were hitting it from that moment.
Well, it's just like watching the episode where Randy Marsh says the N-word on Wheel of Fortune. They say the N-word like 100 times in that episode, just very flatly.
Within the video game, they make you do an abortion, and if you don't do it, the game shuts off.
And you can, like, one of the classes in Stick of Truth is you can play as a Jew. Like, it's crazy. They totally get away with, and so it makes me feel like people are offended by things if the general consensus is they're not funny, because that's the only thing that, unless they got grandfathered in somehow, and people go, well, but that's South Park. Yeah, but you're mad about that. I know, but that's South Park. That's what they do. Like, it seems okay for them now to do something they do.
Yeah, they feel like no one even gets outraged with them. It's not Kanye at all. West. Like, that's it. Like, that's the only person I can remember that's had an issue is Kanye.
Yeah, no, I think it's more like, no, we're going to go attack people that we think will be really upset by it.
And you know what? I think what's so good
so
about
So you don't
that,
think this dog fucking thing is going to stick?
I think it's not going to. I don't think it's not going to stick.
People won't remember.
The way that. The
I don't fuck dogs. Fur, Mom, I don't fuck dogs.
Sticks to your balls when you fuck a dog.
I don't even get
when
that
you,
analogy.
When you get the immense joy and pleasure that you get from putting yourself inside a small canine.
I do love dogs, but not in that way, Mom.
Do you love ejaculating inside a dog? And having the stairs.
That's it. You love it. Love it, love it, love it.
You enjoy it more than anything. And it's not cheating, technically.
If you have pictures of Rob fucking your dog, please send them in.
No. No.
No, we couldn't
draw
find
them.
We
draw them
find,
from memory.
We'd probably sooner find that than Bigfoot and ghosts. There's got to be footage somewhere.
This is
Rob
the year.
Will.
I'm telling you, this is the year we find Bigfoot and ghosts. And we do not.
Why it's already September, Rob. Yeah. It's not happening.
Well, he just wants to find Bigfoot so he can fuck him.
Yeah.
I would probably.
That explains I probably would.
I would fuck Bigfoot if we capture Bigfoot and get him in a cage.
Rob, you will
send me over there. I will fuck
this
him.
This is the claim. If we find Bigfoot, yes. Rob will fuck him.
Yeah, I don't. I'm tired of you all these like bounties. Hurt. Like there are all these bounties on those Bigfoot hunter shows, like $1 million. Like no, I'm throwing down the gauntlet. If we capture Bigfoot and get him in a cage, I will fuck him.
Rob, aka Dog the Bounty Fucker, will fuck Bigfoot. Once and for all.
Once and for all.
All right. Here we go. We did it.
We did it. Good
we
show,
did it.
Guys.
Crash
good
test. Vimeo. Watch Crash Test Vimeo.
On Vimeo or crashtestshow.com.
Yeah.
Enjoy your burrito. All right.
So now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.